Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, hello.
Well, hello. How are you?
Back to the two of us.
You and I.
You're looking, you've got a good colour on today. It's a good colour for you.
Thank you. I'm trying to wear a lot of orange to compensate for the fact that I'm now completely grey-haired.
You think you might sort of bring out the bits of orange in your facial and head hair?
Yes, I'm trying to replenish my ginger essence by wearing more orange.
That's a better way of putting it.
Thank you. Thank you. How's your week been?
It's been fine. How's yours been?
I tell you what, I'm really enjoying the real, I know we're actually technically into spring now, but there's such a whiff of it in the air. And I went for a walk yesterday in the local cemetery, and I just love how much birdsong there is at the minute.
Do you like going to cemeteries?
It's the nearest place. I think it's actually classed as an urban forest. It's a cemetery called Abney Park in Stoke Newington, and it's very right. beautiful. And we started going there during lockdown, you know, when you could do your state-mandated yeah. hour of exercise.
Yeah.
So it was somewhere to take our son, who was dead little at the yeah. time. And I do wonder if this means he's going to grow up to be a goth.
What, because he's spent a lot of time in cemeteries?
Yes.
Maybe.
I wouldn't have a problem with him being a goth.
I don't really go to cemeteries. I've always got sort of rather negative views of cemeteries.
Yeah, I don't think that's an unusual opinion. But this is a particularly beautiful one, I think. It's very, it's been left to nature in a lot of ways. So I guess it's rewilded.
Now, talking of endings.
Yes.
Is that a good segue?
Beautifully done.
So smooth.
Yes.
So it is the last ever Curb Your Enthusiasm is coming out tonight. We're recording on Sunday.
It's on in the States tonight, and it'll be shown in the UK tomorrow. I think it'll be available on demand straight away. But I think probably most people will hear this before they watch the finale.
If they do watch it.
Yeah, because it's one of these things where I feel like everybody I know is obsessed with it. But if you look at the viewing figures, it's actually a tiny amount of people who watch
it. Isn't it extraordinary? I mean, funny you should say that, because the New York Times has sort of had an explosion of articles about Curb Your Enthusiasm, what it says, and we should talk about that, about endings.
It's the new Flaco the Owl, as far as the New York Times is concerned.
It is. But here's the thing that is extraordinary. The final episode of Seinfeld, and of course Larry David was the writer of Seinfeld, had 73 million people watch it.
It's astonishing.
That was on one of the main networks, and Curb Your Enthusiasm was on HBO. But Larry David's premiere, which was higher this year than previous years apparently, or last year, got a million. I mean, isn't it basically a different era?
Yes, that's definitely true, because we all used to just watch everything that was on TV because we didn't really have very much choice if the TV was on. Even in the States, you know, we used to, when I was a kid, and you live there, of course,
yeah.
but I found it amazing that they had more than three or
yeah,
four channels.
Yeah, yeah.
But compared to what we have now, it was still a tiny amount
of
channels.
I mean, can I ask you this question? When was the last time you watched something at the appointed time that it was shown on network television?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think I know what mine would be.
What was yours?
Probably Doctor Who. Was there a Doctor Who Christmassy thing?
Same. Yeah, that yeah. felt like a bit of an event.
But then there's been a whole debate about a new phrase which I had never heard before, but no doubt you know, with your TV podcast never, which is called Sticking the Landing.
Yes, bringing it in for a landing.
Can you explain Sticking the Landing?
Yeah, so fans of TV, I think, spend a lot of time talking about what was considered a good finale and what was considered a bad finale. Now, Seinfeld is sometimes held up as the example of getting the finale wrong.
Yes, apparently it is.
And I don't think that it was a particularly bad episode. I think it's about the weight of expectation and the hype that goes onto it. So as soon as there's all this hyperbole around the chance of finding it funny, if people are tuning in thinking this is going to be the funniest moment in TV history, you can't find it funny in that way.
Now, what caught my eye was a piece by Critics Notebook by James, I think it's Poniewozik, I hope I've pronounced his name correctly, which he basically says, look, this whole Sticking the Landing thing is ridiculous. It's not the way you should think about TV shows. The phrase that pops into my mind is jump the shark. Now, people may have heard that phrase and wonder where it comes from. It comes from Happy Days when the Fonz ski jumped over a shark.
Yes. And people identify that as the
water skied over a shark.
Where this show has become ridiculous. Yeah.
Anyway, but this is not a jump the shark. It's Sticking the Landing. He basically says, look, why are we so obsessed with it's because you feel emotion. You do feel, I do vaguely, the only show I can think of which I watched the start of and eventually I watched the end of was Cheers.
Yes.
So Cheers started when I was living in Boston at the age of 12. And I remember watching the ending. But I think it's because the viewer feels quite emotional. So you can't just sort of have it as a kind of normal. I mean, how are we going to stick the landing when eventually the time comes, Jeff?
I don't know. I think we may have circumvented that well with the chattering.
Yes. Maybe that's true. Maybe that is. Do you think that's because we couldn't emotionally cope with the ending? I think there may have been like 10% of truth in that.
I think so, yeah. When we eventually do our couples therapy and pick this apart, yes, I think that might turn out to be the underlying reason. But one of these articles says that the finale that a viewer writes in their head is better than the one on the show. And I think it's so often the case. So ones where I think people think very fondly of them are, you know, the Blackadder one, the First World War Blackadder one, where they go over the top at the end.
Oh, yes.
I think people think very fondly of that. I think the UK version of The Office did a pretty good job of landing it. Succession, I think, did a good job of landing it, and Better Call Saul. But
I wonder what the last episode was Rent-A-Ghost was.
I wonder. I'm sure it's on YouTube, but sometimes it's better not to look at these things.
Now, let me ask you this. This is a wider thing. So the other article that caught my eye in this New York Times cornucopia of pieces about Larry David and the Curb was by Wesley Morris, who is he's called the critic at large for the Times, or written for the Times for a long time. He says that Larry David is the Emily Post of our time. Emily Post being the Rules of Social Etiquette from the early 20th century. He's a wild monomaniacal jerk. He's also our greatest interpreter of American manners since Emily Post. Do we think this is true?
Yes, I think that's where his brilliance lies. It lies in noticing all these moments in social interaction and social etiquette that we haven't quite figured out how to navigate, or if we have, it's an unwritten or an unspoken rule. I went on Reddit earlier on, and there is a list on there of some of the rules of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I thought I could run through some of them with you and see what you think.
Go on, yeah.
Okay. Taking food from someone's fridge is unacceptable, but liquids are okay.
Yeah, agree.
So if you're in the house, it's okay to open the fridge, help yourself to a glass of orange juice, but if you put anything in your mouth, you've crossed the line.
I think if there was a fruit bowl out with like a tangerine, I think that might be all right. I mean, you'd have to ask.
But the bowl is out, isn't it? The bowl is inviting you to pick at it.
Yeah,
it's the opening the door of the fridge. I think that makes the difference.
Okay.
No chatting cuts.
Oh, this is like trying to get into a line.
Yeah. So imagine you're in a queue for say a buffet or a film.
Yeah, you can't
or
do that.
You see somebody you know.
Yeah.
You can't just go and start talking to them.
Okay, what about the sort of variant of that, which is passing on an order to somebody that you notice in the queue who might have got to the cinema earlier than you, not a family member, but somebody you're going to the cinema with?
I think that's fine as long as
it's not a big order.
Yeah, I think so.
But I mean, that is a version of chat and cut, isn't it?
It is, but then if you extricate yourself from the
cutting.
You could, doing it by text, of course, would be the way to completely get around that.
Yeah.
when waiting in line, it's your duty to fill the gaps. When the person in front of you moves up, you also have to move up.
I'm with that. Entirely psychological, that, yeah.
I know you enjoyed this one. At a dinner party, the middle seat has to be someone who can keep the conversation flowing.
So now you're talking, you see, I learnt about middling from Larry David. Did you know about middling before that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode?
No,
I think we should explain what middling is.
So this is the brilliance of it. He sort of will identify something that we've all thought but never said. So it's if you're having people around for dinner, you need to put somebody in the middle of the table who is very genial, verbose, good with the anecdotes, good at bringing other people in.
Yeah.
That's who gets the middle seat. Otherwise, it sucks the energy out of the occasion.
He actually moves out somebody in the middle of his dinner party, doesn't he? Because he says, I'm afraid you're not a middler.
Do you think you can middle?
Yeah, I think I can middle. Can you middle? You're not really a middler.
I don't think I'm a middler. No, no.
You can keep going. This is good.
No shorts on an aeroplane.
But that's only because of for your own good, because it might be quite cold. No,
I think in the show it's the displeasure of seeing somebody's legs exposed next to you at very close proximity.
Okay, I hadn't known that one, but yeah, okay, I go with that.
I think it depends on the destination.
No, I think it's kind of a good rule.
Okay, I just think that if you were going to Benidorm, it's okay.
Yeah.
If you're going to New York, not okay.
I think that's a fine distinction, but yeah.
Okay. Don't text me to say that you've landed safely. If anything happens, I'll know about it.
No, I don't agree with that. I definitely don't agree with that.
When splitting the bill at dinner, you must coordinate the tip. So this is an episode where I think he's having a meal with Jason Alexander, who played George in Seinfeld, and who gives a much more generous tip than Larry did.
What? And then Larry gets lumbered with it.
No, so say you and I went out for dinner.
Oh, I see.
We split the bill.
Oh, I see.
I give a bigger tip because I want the waiter to like me more.
Oh, I see. So then I look really mean.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. But you've always got to check the tip's actually going to go to the waiter or waitress, don't you?
Yes.
Because often it doesn't.
Even if I see that the tip is included, I will say to them, can I just check that service is included? Yeah. Because I want them to know that I know that I'm tipping.
Yeah, that's the kind of guy you are. Yeah. Keep going.
Okay, well, I've got one more here. No pausing toast. It loses its essence.
Egg, go on.
So you put some toast in the toaster, you put bread in the toaster, and then for whatever reason, you get a phone call, whatever it is. You can't stop the toaster and then restart it.
I mean, you know, I have a real relationship with I have acquired relationship issues with toasters. I'll tell you that time that I went, it was at the BBC or something.
Yeah, you nearly burned down the BBC in Salford,
exactly.
Didn't you?
Because it's those things where they go round on the, and also my family always says that I'm like the person who always burns the toast. I mean, I burn quite a lot of things. I mean, honestly, now you've reminded me, if I'm honest, I'm not loving Series 12 as much as I thought I would.
No, I thought it was a strong start, and then I thought it wasn't one of the stronger series. It's fine, but then the last
I'm watching it quite a lot with my children. It's extremely blue humour, I would say, isn't it?
Yes. What's your rule with that?
Well, the rule just went out the window, really.
Right.
I don't remember the previous series as being quite like that.
But I think last week's episode was good, and I just trust him to do the finale right. But I think it's going to reference the Seinfeld finale in some way.
Well, he's leading up to a trial, which rather suggests it might.
And they've also dropped that in conversationally in pretty much every episode throughout the series, that he came back for the last episode of Seinfeld or that
really?
He worked on. Yeah.
What is extraordinary about him, though, and I've asked you this before not on the podcast, is he seems to get away with things, jokes, that a lot of other people wouldn't get away with.
I think the reason why it's okay is he is often the butt of the joke.
Right.
It's not like a grumpy old man thinking the world has become too woke.
Yeah.
It's a guy a little bit left behind, and then he gets shouted at when he is on the wrong side of things.
Anyway, we'll see what the final episode brings. So can I just make a confession to you, which is, I've had a bad experience with a plant-based lasagna.
Okay, so talk me through what happened.
It was just kind of a lot of work. You know, it was like a meat substitute.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a lot of work for a sort of quite bland thing.
I think that most people who don't eat meat would say to you, skip the substitutes and find a good vegetable recipe. And I think with the...
I quite tested to destruction that theory, or not tested to destruction, I demonstrated that theory to myself.
I think especially with the lasagna, a lot of people would have been scarred by the type of... vegetarian lasagna you'd get in an arts centre in the 80s and 90s. You know, do you feel like we didn't used to know what to do with aubergine and it was horrible?
Yeah,
now we've figured that out.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people still have PTSD from vegetarian lasagna of the past. But there's loads of good recipes out there. That is the way I would encourage you to go.
Yeah. I just wanted to sort of make a declaration on that.
Is this inspired by your family's comments on the aforementioned lasagna?
No, they didn't eat it.
Oh.
It was just, no, they were having meatballs or something. It was just for me.
Oh.
It was just quite a lot of work.
Oh, Ed, your sad and disappointing little meal for one that you made for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Now, we've had some nice correspondence, haven't we?
We have, yes, on a variety of different subjects. Following last week's episode, this comes from Kat on the subject of habituation and gratitude. Hi, Ed and Jeff, long-time listener, first-time emailer here. That's so great to hear after all these years, isn't it?
Definitely.
That somebody's been lurking there.
Definitely.
And finally felt the urge to say to the keyboard. She says, I just listened to and really enjoyed the chatteroo.
No, she says, I love the podcast in both its old and new forms, brackets, inserting a compliment here to see if you acknowledge it, close brackets.
There's your answer. Yeah. There's your answer,
yeah.
Kat.
Yeah.
I just listened to and really enjoyed the chatteroo with Tally Sharrett. I've been thinking about the concept since Ed mentioned it a few episodes back, and it was great to delve into it further. For me, habituation seems strongly linked to gratitude in that recognizing habituation is a way to increase and spark gratitude. I'm currently on maternity leave, and sometimes the days can seem very long, but understanding the concept of habituation has helped me to appreciate that time is fleeting, and I will look back and wish I could experience these days again in the future. I don't always feel this when I'm changing a nappy or getting up 10 times in the night.
You see, this is interesting, isn't it? I mean, there is... I think we didn't really discuss this with Tally, but the sort of thing about... that Kat puts it well, you know, it's this time that you will look back on thinking, well, that time was a bit boring, but or not boring, but whatever it is. But actually, I wish I could have that time back.
Yes. Do you know, one of the greatest pieces of advice I ever received was when my son was born. A friend of mine, he's a radio broadcaster in Manchester, Mike Sweeney, said to me, don't, whatever stage you're in and however miserable it is, don't wish it away, because once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
Another friend of mine said, like, being a parent, it's like a constant cycle of bereavements for the person they were 6 weeks ago. So I've always tried to do that. I've always tried to really appreciate, even when it's a bit wretched, always try and appreciate that this won't be around for very long. Kat also says, P.S. I'm 37 and I can't bear voice notes. I find them very awkward.
Now, can I jump straight to Lynn Barron?
Please do. This is my mother-in-law.
Subject is cicadas. Dear Jeff and Ed, as a 77-year-old Chicago resident, I'm laughing already. I've experienced a 17-year locust 4.52 times. I don't really understand 4.52.
Well, she's clearly divided 77.
Yes. They're disgusting, ugly, and scary. Something not to be missed. I heard both my son-in-law and daughter warn you against having me as your on-site reporter for the 2024 invasion. However, I would like to apply for the job. I will not try not to take over the podcast and to work with Jake, the listener from Chicago, who wrote to offer you lodgings. If hired, I will report on all aspects of the Chicago invasion, what they look like, sound like, where they land, and what they infest. I can send pictures and videos. There will be masses of dead, empty shells that cover the ground. Please consider this form my formal application. I'll be thrilled to be hired. Please make an elderly grandma happy. Should you need to be interviewed in person and experience the cicadas firsthand, I'll welcome you to my home. It could be a once-in-a-lifetime experience, except it will be the fourth for me because I live in Illinois. Lots of love, Lynn H. Don't forget the H. Baron, what does H stand for?
Handelman, which is her maiden name. Maiden name feels like a very old-fashioned word, doesn't it? We need a new word for the concept of maiden name, don't we?
We definitely.
Well, I don't know about
I think
you,
she gets the job. I think that's such a nice application covering letter. She glows the CV.
I mean, I just think the application process is still open. We will definitely consider your application, Lynn, and we'll keep it on file should an opportunity emerge at any stage.
I mean, look, I understand your worries about nepotism here, but then there is sort of, you know, reverse. I mean, if Lynn is the best qualified candidate for the job, I don't think we can sort of, you know, wanted 77-year-old in-law of Jeff's. Anyway, there we go. But I think we're quite close to cicada. I mean, you know, we better appoint quite quickly because we're quite close to the cicadas coming out, aren't we?
Yeah, it could be any day now. I'm sure she's watching the. I wonder how do they start to emerge?
I don't know.
Do you see? What does that look like? Does it begin with a trickle?
I don't know, or a flood.
Yeah,
I mean, they are pretty close up. They're pretty nasty looking creatures.
Oh, just judging on appearances.
Okay, that's a good point.
Now, I wanted to include this one because our family is going to feed the capybaras this week in Hounslow.
Oh, good.
And this is from Louise Brown, who says there's a capybara on the loose. Hello, Ed and Jeff. From your talk of capybaras on the Chatteroo, I knew you would enjoy reading about the famous escaping capybara of Henley. Lord, now deceased, and Lady McAlpine live on a large estate just outside Henley, and as well as having a working steam train line in their garden, they also have a lot of different animals. That feels very Victorian, doesn't it, having a lot of exotic animals on your huge estate?
Yes.
Jack the Capybara was famous in the area for his escape routines. You can track some of his adventures in the local news article below. So this is an article from 2019 in the Henley Standard, headlined Farewell Jack, the Runaway Capybara. It is with much sadness that I have to report that Lady McAlpine's capybara, Jack, has died at the age of 14. The exploits of the large rodent, native to South America, often filled these columns with his frequent bids for freedom some years ago. Henley Standard readers sent him pictures of Jack swimming in the Thames, eating apples and sunbathing when he escaped from the Fawley Hill estate. His partner died 2 years ago, after which Jack became inseparable from his best friend, a young male tapper. That was also part of Lady McAlpine's exotic animal collection. In the summer of 2013, he escaped his fenced enclosure, was sighted many times along the river between Toad Hall Garden Centre and Temple Island before finally being recaptured at Temple Lock. However, as soon as he was back home, he managed to escape again and entertain revellers on the riverbank during the Henley Royal Regatta. He was caught by the groundskeeper, a man called Mr. Twigger, who nabbed him
quite
with a fox
the
trap. Baited with apples, bananas and grapes.
He weighed about 100 kilos.
Yeah, and he was 3 foot long, so a metre long.
Bloody
hell. Rest in peace, Jack.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is quite the story.
I will let you know how it goes with the capybaras this week. I'll report back for you.
I mean, please do. Definitely. Now, do you want to do this? Shall I do the swimming one?
Yes.
Because I think it's sort of important to keep people updated. This one comes from Christine Glover, subject Ed Swimming. I've been listening forever to you two chattering, not had anything lately re Ed Swimming. My son goes to the same ponds, but as yet the two have never met. Keep going as Monday's sunrise will never be the same. Chris Seven Oaks Granny. Now, Chris the Seven Oaks Granny is sort of, I kind of did get through the winter, but then when it was sort of in the doldrums of sort of 6 or 7 degrees, I was a bit fed up and I didn't do it as often, but I am back.
Do you enjoy people swimming over and chatting to you? So if Christine's grandson saw you, is that the environment where you like a swim and chat?
Well, remember, the thing that has really changed my life in terms of swimming is the Swim P3 players that a podcast listener recommended to me about 5 years ago. So I tend to be listening to Runciman. and actually, the Runciman podcasts, now that you've mentioned it, on the, all right, maybe it's me that's mentioned it, on the American elections, on 8 American elections, very good. And the History of Freedom with Leah Ippi, also very good. So I tend not to be able to hear, but I do sort of wave at people. And the grey heron is much in evidence.
Has it been away?
Well, I was away, so.
But it was pleased to see you.
It expressed great.
Did you get any sense that it was a joyful reunion for the herring? You know, like you'll sometimes see those videos where people have released a lion into the wild 20 years ago, and then they're reunited, and it's beautiful. Is that like you and the heron?
Not so much. I feel like this is a good segue to seagulls.
Yes, yes. There was an article this week on the BBC News website about seagulls. The headline is, "Seagulls Charismatic, Not Criminal, Say Scientists." This is by Helen Briggs, environmental correspondent. It says, "Seagulls have been forced into our towns by a loss of natural spaces, and we need to learn to live alongside them, say scientists. Hit by multiple pressures, from avian flu to depleted fish stocks, gull populations are dwindling in the wild. Driven into urban areas to survive, they're coming into conflict with humans for stealing food." I'm completely on board with this idea. Because I've been watching a couple of shows about highwaymen, or a highwayman and a highwaywoman, and I was thinking about the way that they became folk heroes.
Yeah.
But they didn't do anything noble. They weren't robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. They were just robbing from the rich. But there was something very attractive about these disruptive personalities, and I think that is how we should reframe our thinking about seagulls.
Sorry, I've lost you slightly. Explain how you should reframe them.
Right, so seagulls, people think of them as pests because they're stealing pasties out of people's hands or stealing ice cream out of
toddlers' fists. Isn't the pooing that people don't like?
People don't like the pooing, no, but that is...
That's a secondary thing.
That's a fair point. I mean, I don't know quite how we would reframe that. But I think it's the way that they scavenge human waste.
And so what's your argument?
Not the poo. Is that we should think of them as kind of mavericks, outsiders, renegades. You're not into this.
Are they really very steely?
Oh, yeah. You could fall down a real, I was going to say rabbit hole, but maybe a seagull hole on YouTube or Instagram or whatever, finding videos of seagulls encroaching into human territory and stealing stuff. I mean, Some of them are even going into supermarkets now.
No, come on.
Yes, yes. No, really. Really, this is the thing. There are videos of security guards, I think in either Devon or Cornwall, who are posted specifically to ward off seagulls.
Are you sure it's not an April Fool a few days late?
Yes, yes.
I mean, look, this is just a wider thing, isn't it, about animals, either habitat or feedstocks being depleted. And then, I mean, the urban fox thing is just quite extraordinary, isn't it?
It really is. I've said before, if I was a fox, I'd rather live in the city than the countryside.
Why?
Just because it seems like an easier life to me. The other night, I heard a terrible noise with two foxes outside, and then there was meowing at our front door. Oh. Sarah went and opened it. This was about 1 a.m, and there was a cat at the front door. So she opened the front door, it came in, it walked through the house and then stood at our back door. We'd never seen this cat before in its life, and it just wanted us to open the back door. It wanted to use our house as safe passage. A rat run to get away from the foxes.
Did you give it safe passage?
Yeah, we just opened the back door and off it went, yeah.
Extraordinary. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Gene wants a pet tortoise, and I don't think it's a great idea.
Why?
The amount of time it lives for.
Like 100 years.
So it's going to outlive me if he gets a pet tortoise.
Right.
But it's difficult to explain to an 8-year-old, if you want to go and study abroad, what will happen to the tortoise then?
Have you Googled, what do I do if my tortoise, if I go and live abroad, what do I do with my tortoise?
I haven't, no. No, but I think people make provision in their wills for tortoises, knowing that they're going to outlive them.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What is the provision? Like, you financial provision?
I guess so. They set up a trust fund for a tortoise.
Now, maybe our listeners have got a particular... Maybe we've got some tortoise owners listening? You can give us some advice.
Yeah, I think the laws changed a few years ago regarding the import of tortoises.
Passports for pets. So if should Jeff get a tortoise?
Chat at cheerfulpodcast.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you're a Larry David watcher, what do you think of the last episode? We'd like to report back.
Also, are there any social etiquette rules not covered in Curb Your Enthusiasm that you have devised yourself?
Or covered that Jeff missed out?
Yeah. Do you respect wood?
Respected wood.
He doesn't like people putting a mug down on the table without a coaster. But yes, we should do a little review of that next week. And also just on this seagull thing, I like anything where an animal is featuring in your day-to-day life. I'm not talking about pets. I'm talking about...
That's nice, isn't it? I'd like a bit like, you know, you mean the sort of the daily visit from Mr. Fox or Mrs. Fox?
Yeah, this kind of thing.
Yeah, I sort of like that idea.
And I really enjoyed talking to Tally last week. So if there's anybody else people would like to hear us talk to.
And in fact, I can tell you that we are going to be talking to Mark Steers and Tom Baldwin about their book
England.
England, Seven Myths That Changed a Country. And hopefully we're going to be talking to them in a couple of weeks. They're very enthusiastic.
Yes, I just took delivery of this yesterday. It looks
Oh, you took delivery of it. Good.
I did take delivery,
well,
yes.
That's a good sign.
Yes, yes. So that email address is chat@cheerfulpodcast.com.
Now I'm off to work out what to do with my lasagna.
Compost it.
We'll see.
And I'm off to prepare to feed the capybaras.
Bye.
Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.